Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dan Wernsberger on the show today. Bucknell Wrestling Coach Brandy Gobbin, BleedingGreenNation.com. And Chad Margulis from Black Shoe Diaries on Penn State basketball. Big night last night. Bucknell won big over Loyola. Navy lost. BU won. Bucknell Sunday hosts BU. Next step, Lady Lion basketball team won last night. Duke rallied and stunned North Carolina last night in a game that looked like North Carolina had all night. But the fallacy, of course, is always going to be, look how the Roy Williams botched the end of the game. He should have called a timeout. That's not where that game was lost. You know, you get three chances. If you really follow it and know it, you get three chances really in a game to win it. Sometimes that chance is in the first half. Sometimes that chance is really in the, like, that under 12 to under 8 area that swings it. And then sometimes, you know, obviously it can be at the end. North Carolina had tremendous opportunities to pound the ball inside. They could not stop Johnson. Plumlee, with 12 minutes to go, had 4 fouls. Plumlee never got the 5th foul because North Carolina didn't pound the ball inside. He only had 1 field goal attempt down the stretch. They started getting happy on the farm, taking jump shots. Guess what North Carolina's not good at? Taking jump shots. They're the worst three-point shooting team in the ACC. They're out there taking threes. You're sitting there going, what are you doing here? They got away from their game plan. They kept the door open for Duke to win the game. At the end, should he have called timeout? I don't really care one way or another if a coach calls a timeout, because if you do it right, you get the other team on its heels. The problem is North Carolina walked the ball up the floor. Once they walked the ball up the floor, they then took away the advantage of Duke backpedaling, and Duke was then set defensively as if North Carolina had taken the ball out of bounds. At that point, with 3 timeouts, you probably ought to take one. But before then, there's no need to take one. I mean, before then, there's no need to take one if you've got them on their heels and you can get what you want. But as usual, I always love the simplistic, should have called time. Look, there are a bunch of areas to win a game. And the game is not an 18-second game. It's a 40-minute game. And that 40 minutes, where were the opportunities? Well, North Carolina blew its opportunities. And they blew it, you know, and it's all on them. You got a guy like Johnson they can't handle. You've got a center that Duke puts back in the game with 12 minutes to go with 4 fouls. You attack him relelessly, where one of two things either happens. He backs off enough and you get clean shots, or he gets the 5th foul and everybody waves goodbye to him. Never did it. I don't really know what the thought process was by how they played last night. And then, of course, there's Penn State and Iowa. We welcome in Kevin Herr.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you today?
I'm great.
We're going to talk to Dan Wernsberger at 3:35. I'm looking forward to it. A great guest to have on the show. We're going to talk about Bucknell Wrestling. Nate Cobbler is going to join us tomorrow from the Center Daily Times to talk about Penn State, Oklahoma State. And we're going to have Jeff Byers on tomorrow to talk about Penn State, Oklahoma State. And we're going to have Tommy Olchek on tomorrow to talk about Penn State ice hockey. That's Ed's son.
I was listening to Byers the other night coming back from Bellefonte for a few minutes. I was flipping between you and wrestling.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be on the show tomorrow. which should be a really good dual meet. I think Penn State, I think we'll win it like 23-17, somewhere in that range, based on what I see matchup-wise. Should be like a 23-17.
That's a tight one.
Actually, Penn State. I'm sorry, 23-15.
Oh, okay.
23-15, I think Penn State will win.
It's still a tight one for Penn State.
Yeah.
By Penn State standards, that's tight.
It'll make the Penn State fans happy that they won. That's fine. And it'll just be another step toward another national title. I mean, to me, the biggest thing in wrestling this year is, you know, obviously, you know, do I want Penn State to win? Obviously, of course I do. But I think the biggest thing is they're going to be in Madison Square Garden this year. You got to get the thing out of the Midwest. You're going to watch it anyway out there on TV. You know, get it to some spots where it can actually grow the sport. You know, putting the thing in Oklahoma City, Tulsa, St. Louis, that grow the sport. All right, putting it in Madison Square Garden, that grows the sport. Because you get all those New York media outlets that are actually going to cover it. All right? It is not going to be a footnote in the lower corner of the New York Times somewhere, if it does make the New York Times. What will happen is it'll make the New York Times. There'll be stories on it in the New York Times. There'll be stories on it on all the New York stations. You'll have radio stations mentioning, hey, by the way, over at the Garden coming up tonight, it's the NCAA Wrestling Championships. We're in a media market with 14 million people. That if it were in St. Louis, Tulsa, or Oklahoma City, it would never get mentioned even after the champion was crowned. Correct?
There's no question about it. I'm just curious to see if there were still tickets available.
No, there aren't any tickets available. I think that's sold out easily. Easily sold out.
Yeah, I think the only way you can get them is through ticket broker setups.
Yeah, something like that. But big picture, it's the smartest move that the sport can make. I mean, big picture, it is the smartest move the sport can make. You're now putting it into the media center of the country with the opportunity to give the sport publicity outside of the Olympics. It's not going to get. Now, ESPN, to its credit, does a great job covering it by the usage of ESPN3, ESPN. They've expanded coverage over the years. They've done really well with it. Really well. I really like how they've embraced it and gone after it and shown a lot more of it. But the Garden thing, they do not. I've had people say, well, it was in Philadelphia. Hello? And that did you what? It got you there to see it, so that's a big plus. All right? It was in the East. That's a plus. But, okay. There's a big, big difference between playing the thing in anything in Philadelphia and playing the thing in New York at the Garden.
I think there still are tickets available, but they are like mat side.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, $410 a piece.
Isn't it? Oh, that's fine. You got to pay the rent to be in the place.
Well, and that's just for sessions 5 and 6.
Oh. But again, big picture, this is a big moment for the sport.
I mean,
with all due respect to St. Louis and to Oklahoma City, look, that's fine. All right, that's fine. Even Philadelphia was good. You know, Philadelphia embraced it. They sold it out. They did a great job. All right, but this has nothing to do with we sold it out. It has nothing to do with that. If you want to grow the sport, you've got to do it in such a way where other people find out about it. Well, in a media market of 14 million people, you're going to have all the New York TV stations that will cover it. You'll have the New York newspapers from the Post to the Daily News to the New York Times cover it. Okay? Right? With all due respect to a fine paper, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, it's a little bit different when the New York Times covers your event.
By the way, the 200 level seats for the session 6 are averaging just about $300.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to pay the rent on a big time place, and look, people are going to have to spend some money to go and do this. I understand that. I would sense there'd be a lot of hotels in New Jersey doing this, but look, for fans of Oklahoma State wrestling, of Iowa wrestling, and so forth. I mean, look, you get to go to New York City in March? Pretty darn good.
Well, I just wonder, why, though, if those tickets went for the same in the Midwest. That's what I meant.
Oh, I have no idea. It doesn't matter.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it, too. But, again, for the growth of the sport, putting it there, and I don't mean every year, but putting there now, the timing is tremendous for the growth of the sport. And again, you know, I'm not really big on little picture, short term stuff.
Well,
and I think this is a brilliant move in the department. It's like, I think with the Big Ten basketball championship, they're going to sacrifice a week 2 years from now to put it in the Garden. Well, you're darn right. It's for Big Ten basketball. That's a brilliant move. Brilliant.
Well, let's look at this from a fan standpoint and the fan base. All right, with it being in New York. Here's your number one school, obviously, is Penn State. That's a benefit because that's going to draw a ton of fans. NC State, it's actually closer for them to be in New York. That's going to draw some people. Virginia Tech, closer to be in New York. Then you drop down, you have Lehigh. Obviously, it's closer to be in New York. And let's see. Then you run into Ohio State, which probably is 6-1, half a dozen of another. Same with Michigan. But the only teams that really will have a fan base that will have to travel in the top 10 is Iowa, Oklahoma State, Missouri, and Oklahoma.
Tough. It's in your backyard every year.
Well,
come east.
My point, yeah, okay. That's exactly my point. You okay, said it's a perfect year. You're right.
You're darn right. Come on east. I'm sick and tired of you hosting everything. It's like having all the bowl games in the South. Like, I can't believe it. Felt like a road game. Really? You felt like it felt like a road game. Did you really think that? It felt like a road game to you? All right. Not only have it in the east, but guess what? You're going to the majors. Okay? You're in the major leagues. Okay? Here's an opportunity to go into the majors and show them what you got. And believe me, they'll put on a heck of a show, and they'll show everybody what they've got, and it's going to help the sport. May have to pay a little bit more to go. Gas is cheaper in New Jersey. All right.
Let's see. I think there's 14 of the top 24 that are actually east of the Mississippi.
And there's only one of the top 24 that has a chance of the national championship.
That's
we'll
also
come back
true.
With more in a moment. Hey, really? I mean, I'm seriously. They'll win this thing 23-15.
Okay? As I said, that's a close match.
Really?
No, that's a close match by Penn State standards, is what I'm saying.
Okay, I did it with relatively few bonus points figuring in. I did not figure any Tech falls or falls in there. The most I gave anybody was a major. 23-15.
So what you're saying is bye-bye. You went conservatively.
Yes. Bye-bye. Thanks for playing. You're done. Back to Stillwater you go.
Thank you for playing.
By the way, J.J. Smith, we're not sure. John Smith's son is still 50-50 as whether he wrestles. He's coming off an injury, and the plan is they hope he will, but they've got a dual meet on Friday night. In Stillwater. They're not going to fly in here until Saturday.
Well, you know, we're joking about the close, you know, this one being a close match. If you look at Penn State's scores, the closest matches, Nebraska was 24-10. Ohio State was 24-14. What was Virginia Tech? Where's that one?
24-17, I think, wasn't it?
I don't even see that
24-17 early. It's one of the first ones of the season.
Oh, there it is. 21-15.
21-15. All right. That was relatively close.
Yeah. So 21-15. Then your next ones are Nebraska at 24-10 and Ohio State, which was a 10-point match.
But this would be important for Cale. This would be actually another hurdle to get over. I mean, even though the regular season's technically over, but if you win this, you have an undefeated dual meet season. He's never had an undefeated dual meet season.
Really?
Nope. So this would be a really cool another cool thing for him to have. He's never had an undefeated dual meet season. All right. We'll come back. We'll talk. We got a lot to talk about basketball for those who heard it last night or watched it. That was another big win for Penn State. And we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right. Last night, Penn State beat Iowa in basketball, and Dick and I have been saying for 2 weeks that this was a winnable game. We've been saying it for 2 weeks. I even mentioned it yesterday in the game before I left the show yesterday. I said, look, this is a winnable game. Why do I say such things? There are such things. I look very carefully at matchups. I watched them play the first time. The first time, I didn't think Penn State. I didn't think Iowa played really that well against Penn State the first time. And Penn State missed 21 layups. They missed 12 in the first half and 9 in the second half. Well, if you're missing 21 layups, what kind of offense could you have generated? Well, last night they didn't miss layups. Last night they hit 10 threes. When they beat Northwestern, they hit 9. When they beat Indiana, they hit 8. Last night, they hit 10. They were 1 for 20 in three-point shots at Iowa. 1 for 20. The first 20 they took last night, they hit 10. The only things that kept Iowa in the game last night were live ball turnovers in the first half. That's on Penn State. I mean, you got to clean that up, which they did in the second half. They only had 5 turnovers in the second half. And the free throw line. Free throw line was a gift to Iowa that kept on giving all night long and kept them in the game. But Penn State took the lead with 5:07 to go in the first half and never lost the lead the rest of the night. In fact, Iowa, not one time in the second half did Iowa come down the floor with the ball with a chance to take the lead. Not once. They built up some collateral. They built up a cushion. They maintained the cushion. And when they started the second half last night, I made the statement to Dick on the broadcast. I said, Iowa in the opening 4 minutes is going to come out of the gate, and they're going to show everybody their Iowa. It is up to Penn State to look at Iowa and say, so what? At the under 16, Penn State was still maintaining a 6-point lead. And I said, Dick, Iowa came out firing, hit 4 out of 7 in the opening 4.5 minutes of the second half. Penn State hit 4 of 8. Iowa said, we're Iowa, and Penn State just looked at them square in the eye and said, so what? Now they got Rutgers coming up. Dan Wernsberg, we're going to talk wrestling, then we're going to shift to the Eagles, and then back to Penn State basketball. It's a big show today, a lot to cover. Great to have you on board on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll get to this day in sports history a bit later because we have Dan Wernsberger on the line, the head wrestling coach at Bucknell. Coach, welcome back. It's our pleasure to have you on again.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You've won four of your last five dual meets. The one that didn't go your way was the last one timeout against a really good Penn team that won 19-18. In the growth and development of your team this season, that process, what have you liked?
You know, I like our guys as far as just the experience that we have. We got some experienced guys in our team, and I like that we're making improvements as the year goes along here. We're starting to become more consistent, you know, through the preparation, which carries into competition, and that's always good to see from a coaching standpoint. And I think we're starting to come together at the right time of the year as far as consistency, feeling good, being healthy, avoiding any type of illness. And those are the keys at a program like ours, is just keeping those 10 starters that you have intact and competing together at the same time. And we've been able to do that over the last few weeks, where we've just been as healthy as we have been all year. And it's starting to show. Our guys look like they feel good, even though we lost to Penn. I thought we had great energy in the dual meet. We just didn't win the really tough points, the tough matches when we needed to. But there's no question in my mind that we can turn those around in a few weeks, and that's our hope.
Overall this season, what kind of leader has Joe Stolfi been for you?
No, the guy's fantastic. I mean, he's been a thoroughbred for us and consistent throughout his career. And he wasn't in our lineup at the first half of the year, just still recovering from shoulder surgery, which he had suffered this injury at NCAAs last year. And he was just able to consistently still be there as far as a solid leader for the guys, even when he was sitting out. And I know he was anxious to get back in there, and we probably held him out a little bit longer than we needed to, but we wanted to err on the other side as far as being more safe, as far as bringing him back. He had been going live for a good month before we brought him back into the competition scene. So he's phenomenal. You know, the guy's, whatever, 16-1 on the year. He's got one loss. 10 of his 16 wins are by Penn. The guy's a doggone pinner. I think he's got 112 or something like that, 113 career wins, and 61 or 62 are by Penn, which is, for Division One wrestling, you know, it's amazing. It really is. It's quite an accomplishment for that guy.
What does it tell you about his killer instinct that he does that?
He goes for the beat. He wrestles like a middleweight, where when he wrestles, you know he's going to score points. He's going out there. He's not standing around. He's not like a typical dancing bear, so to speak. And he's fun to watch. He's fun to watch. And, you know, I asked his dad, actually. I was like, gosh, he just finds ways, you know, to pin guys. I was like, you know, what's the deal with that? I asked his dad, has he always been like that? You know, and he just said, for whatever reason, yeah, since he was a kid, you know, when he started wrestling, he was 6, 7, 8 years old. I mean, he would just, more times than not, pin guys, you know, rare, but, you know, he would pin more than he would win by a regular decision or a major decision, you know, and just says a lot about his instinct and just finding a way and having a feel for the sport and finding a way to in a lot of circumstances, just determination and the will to get the guy over to his back.
Paul Petroff has won 26 times for you this year, 12 in dual meets, and in the IWA hasn't lost, and he's another guy with 6 pins. What have you liked in his development?
Yeah, he's always been very consistent for us. You know, those bookends where you got Petroff on the front end and Stolfi on the back end, that's been a big deal for us over the last few years, that we're going to miss those guys next year. But another consistent performer. He's a lifestyle guy, is what Paul is more than anything. You know, he doesn't just live it just in the practice room or the athletic arena. He lives it outside of it. It's meaningful to him. He has passion about what he does. His nutrition's always good. His rest is always good. He's a good kid. And usually when your lifestyle, away from the athletic arena is matching your passion in the athletic arena, good results typically happen for you. So, you know, he's just one of those guys that's always ready to go when he shows up to work.
What have you liked about the development of Rustin Barrick?
Oh, there's another guy. You know, a big deal for Rustin is, you know, he's moved up a couple weight classes. Well, a few years ago he was a 65-pounder, then he moved down to 57, and just thought from a health standpoint, 74 might be the best weight class for him, so he didn't have to worry about diet or keeping his weight down, anything like that. He could just focus on becoming a better wrestler. And this guy's faced a couple different times adversity, you know, as far as injury and maybe season-ending or career-ending injury. What should he do? And he's always come back stronger and fought through it and been more determined. You know, there was a couple times where he could have, thrown in the towel and said, I'm done, my career's done, my season's done. And this guy, just, there is no give up or quit in him. And I know one thing about the sport of wrestling, when you roll up your sleeves and you stick to things, stick to this sport, what you put into it is what you get out of it. Eventually you get a good result, you know, when you stay with it. And because there's no sport like it as far as, you know, the preparation needed for it, the mental toughness needed for it at the Division I level. And this guy's been able to push through it from a mental standpoint, which says a lot about his character.
Tom Slay's had an interesting year, including six Tech Falls for you to lead the way. What kind of scoring machine has he been for you at times?
Yeah, he's another one. He's like one of those super sophomores, I call him. You know, we got a couple of those super sophomores in Tyler Smith and Tom Slay, and those guys are just hammers. You know, they love wrestling, you know, first and foremost, and they bring always good energy and good passion to what they're doing. They like what they're doing. They enjoy what they're doing, which is extremely important at this level. Tom Slay's always got a smile on his face, and he's ready to take on any competition. He's physical. He's a strong kid. He's a determined kid, through and through Pennsylvania-style type of wrestler, and you know, just love the kid to death.
Yeah, in fact, Tyler Smith's right there with him. Six falls this year, so he's second to Joe Stolfing in that department. You referenced him briefly. What about him?
Yeah, he's a super talented guy, you know, very just extreme talent as far as a good feel for the sport. A little different from Tom. Tom brings a lot of physicality to the game, and Tyler Smith has same type of determination, but it's just a little bit more technical with his style of wrestling. But you know, Tyler Smith, I think what sets these guys apart, you know, Tyler Smith and Tom Slay, these guys are really, really good on top. You know, you put them on the mat in the top position, and anytime you have a good top game in Division I wrestling, it becomes your top game becomes really, really valuable as you approach the postseason. I think it's it can be a deciding factor. It can be a difference maker is what I tell these guys. It can be a difference maker when you get to the EIWAs, and then when you get to the NCAA tournament, is just being that guy that's a hammer on top and determined on top and can ride guys.
What kind of season have you seen from Victor Lopez?
Yeah, another guy that's, he's a junior for us, and he's a hard guy to wrestle. You know, Victor brings a little funky type of style. He's a California kid, and but he's another guy that, you know, he's got a really physical game on top, and that helps him in his wrestling as far as just taking a lot out of guys. This is a guy that just loves to be in the mat room as well. He's not just one of those that shows up in the afternoon when we're in there from 4 to 5:30 or 4 to 6 or just in the weight room. I mean, he's always saying, "Hey, coach, let's meet in the morning. Can we meet? Can we scrap? Can we?" You know, he's the kind of guy we always say, hey, let's take a morning off, take some time off, rest your legs. But he's been very consistent for us. He's a fun guy to be around. And, you know, we see a lot of good things coming from him this postseason. It's just a matter of all these guys coming together and just being healthy and just feeling their best at the right time of the year. And that's kind of what we're approaching right now.
You have Binghamton and Columbia coming up. Are those the kind of dual meets that can set the tone since they're the last opportunities before you get to postseason?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're league matches, which is really important for us, you know. Both of them are in the EIWA conference matches, so that can affect seeding. That can affect seeding in a couple of weeks. So you want to make sure we keep our eye on the ball and be ready to go. And, yeah, we talk about it. I think we have some good momentum going right now in the month of February. And, obviously, we want to continue that momentum, you know, tomorrow night and then Saturday afternoon and just get ourselves feeling good, not just physically, but feeling good mentally as we're getting ready for Easterns at Princeton there that first weekend in March. So, yeah, these are important matches, and I know we're as healthy as we're going to be, and we'll bring good energy and be ready to go.
Big picture question now. Obviously, the NCAAs a few years ago were in Philadelphia. A lot of times it's in St. Louis, Oklahoma City. Big picture-wise, what does it mean to put it in Madison Square Garden?
I love it. You know, it's just to be out east here like this. I think it's important for the sport. Just to be out east and being in an arena like MSG is a big deal for our sport and the guys that are going to be competing in it, as well as the fans to spectate. So, you know, we're pumped about it. I mean, first for us, you know, we don't have to get on a plane and travel to the Midwest, anything like that. We can just cruise down the road about 2.5-3 hours and spend a little bit more time here in beautiful Lewisburg and kind of prep that way, which is always important. The longer you can stay at home and be in your own facility and be in your own bed, I think is critical. But love the idea. Really looking forward to see how this thing works out with it being in Madison Square Garden and just being back out east here is really cool.
Dan, it's always a pleasure. Best of luck this weekend with Binghamton and Columbia. We look forward to talking to you again really soon. Really like what you've done with the team.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate you guys having me on. And let's go Bison.
Dan Wernsberger, head wrestling coach, Bucknell. What a job he's done. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, it's important along the way to get Bucknell's Dan Wernsberger on the show. He's done a really great job with that program. EIWAs are coming up, and then it's the NCAAs at Madison Square Garden. Now, tomorrow we'll have Nate Cobbler on from the Sunday Daily Times to preview Penn State, Oklahoma State, and also Jeff Byers on the show to preview Penn State, Oklahoma State. That's all coming up on tomorrow's show. Next half hour, Brandon Gotten, BleedingGreenNation.com. We'll talk about the Eagles. He's talking about maybe RG3 maybe being a fit for Philadelphia. Okay. We'll find out why he thinks that. And also, Chad Margulies will be on with us from Black Shoe Diaries on Penn State basketball. The Nittany Lions, I mean, that's the story of the night right there. And that's the story of the week. Yeah, the fourth-ranked team in the country, a team that's on the number one line right now for the NCAA tournament. They're a number one seed, and Penn State beat them. And that's two now in 11 days. They beat Indiana. They beat Iowa. The odd thing is, the third team that's fighting for the conference championship, Penn State should have beaten them, too. That's Maryland. Now can they find some consistency? But it really helps when you find, it's more than, wow, an unexpected source, Donovan Jack. That's true, 19 points. But it's more than that. You got to go a little deeper than that. It's the ability to have somebody step up as a third scorer that makes a difference. Brandon Taylor gave them 18 last night. Shep Garner gave them 18, 14 in the first half. Who was the third scorer going to be? It turned out that third scorer was Devin Foster against Indiana. He wasn't available last night, wasn't here. He was in Dayton last night with his girlfriend. She had a baby. And the third scorer that stepped up, at times earlier was Peyton Banks, but last night was Donovan Jack. That's the third. You need a third scorer to make something like this happen. You can't just rely on two guys to make it happen. They did. I just can't downplay, though, the fact that when you play with the lead, it makes a world of mental difference. Instead of trying to swim upstream, okay? Instead of trying to shovel you the you-know-what against the tide, they were able to go out and they were able to play with the lead last night. That was really important. They got the lead with 5:07 to go in the first half. They never relinquished it. In the second half, Iowa never came down the floor with a chance to take the lead. Not one time did Iowa come down the floor with a chance to take the lead. Play with enough collateral, that will happen. And look, if it's not for the free throw line, Penn State wins the game by 10 to 15 points if it's not for the free throw line. And I'm not saying that I have no idea how the game was called last night. My problem that I saw in last night's game, you know, there is no unwritten rule that says, well, the game's over and you have 17 fouls and he has 16. The game's over, you each have 15 fouls. There's no rule like that. If there's a foul disparity based on style of play, there's foul disparity based on style of play. It's simple as that. The problem I had last night was the stuff I couldn't see. there were a lot of calls off the ball last night. Now, obviously, as the play-by-play guy, what am I watching? For the most part, I'm watching the ball. Unless I know where the ball, I think, you've seen enough plays, you get a sense of where the ball's going to go. The fourth foul on Brandon Taylor was a bad call. A bad call. And the reason that's one that's off the ball that I saw, because I knew he was getting the ball in that set. A bad call. But the other off-the-ball calls, I could not tell you if they were good calls or bad calls. I don't know. There were so many off-the-ball calls last night. So that part I couldn't even guess at. But that's what kept Iowa in the game. The free throw line kept them in the game. And the first half was live ball turnovers. That helped. Free throw line, live ball turnovers helped Iowa in the first half. Live ball turnovers are Penn State's fault. Second half, Penn State cut it down to only five turnovers. And the five turnovers were spread out among five guys. Jordan Dickerson was live last night. He changed the tone of a lot of things early in the game when he was not in foul trouble. And Iowa had struggled as to what to do with him when he was in the game. Donovan Jack was outstanding. He was 8 of 9 from the field. The only shot he missed was that three-pointer. Or I'm really hot. Is it my night? Go back to shooting twos. Okay. He was 8 of 8 and 2s, 0 of 1 and 3s. And he had 5 rebounds to go with it. Isaiah Washington, in the first half, had a shaky opening half. In the second half, he played with a confidence I have not seen from him on this level. I give him all the credit in the world, the confidence that he played with. And then there's the free throw line. Penn State has had a really good ability this year, when they've had the opportunity, to close games. Penn State's been a very good closer this year. That's why they're 4-1 in games decided by 5 points or less. And last night was another really good example. Penn State, in the final 4 minutes of last night's game, hit 12 of 14 at the free throw line. And one of the two they missed was the last free throw that Brandon Taylor took, and that was a good miss. You're like, good miss? Why is that a good miss? Okay, it's a good miss for this reason. He hit the first one to make it a 4-point game. Thus, he made it a 2-possession game. By missing the second free throw, which was not deliberate, but by missing the second free throw, Woodbury had to rebound the ball right away. And guess what? The second he touches the ball, what happens? The clock starts. That was a good miss. Ate up a lot of time coming up the court, and they never got a shot off anyway because Garner slapped the ball away from Clemens. But they hit 12 of 14 down the stretch in the final 4 minutes at the free throw line. When Iowa finally had to foul, that's when Penn State got free throw attempts. This year, Penn State is a 69% free throw shooting team, which is okay. It's not great. 69 is okay. But in the final 4 minutes, Penn State is over 73% at the line on the season. Now, that's not in the game notes or anything like that. That's a stat that I keep where I determine whether free throws and the free throw line are pressure free throws determining the outcome of the game. That's my stat. Over 73%. When they had a chance to close Indiana, they closed Indiana. When they had a chance to close Northwestern, they closed Northwestern. When they had a chance to close Minnesota, they closed Minnesota. Now, you're going to face a team where you're going to be the favorite on Saturday. No Corey Sanders. Rutgers hasn't played well. Rutgers is going to look at this game on Saturday as a golden opportunity to play at home. It is up to Penn State to go in there, play with some attitude, get out of the gate, put the level of doubt in there early. Take it and leave. Sometimes it's as simple as that. They're struggling. Remind them that they're struggling. And then get out of there with a W and then go to the next one. Hey, you need to now start stringing something together. You got something cooking here. You've won two of your last three, and they happen to be against two of the top 22 teams in the country, at least rankings-wise. Seven wins all time against top five teams. I broadcast six of them.